Welcome to the Next Stage Business Radio Show. This is Pamela Muldoon, ready for another 2 hours on a Saturday afternoon here in Business 1570. Thanks so much for joining us today. We are kicking off May 1st, and gosh, I cannot believe it's already May 1st. And as always, we have a jam-packed couple of hours ahead here at the Next Stage Business Radio Show. We're going to be talking in our Team of Advisors segment. We have our legal advisor, of course, Jeffrey O'Brien from Mansfield, Tannick & Cohen. He is here in studio, and we have a special guest with Jeff who is going to be on in a little bit, and of course that is Marshall Tannick from Mansfield, Tannick & Cohen. We're going to be talking about today what you can, or probably more importantly, what you can't say when you're advertising and marketing your business. So we're going to have a great conversation with my two attorneys, and coming up in the second part of Hour 1 is, of course, the Organization of the Week, and today I'm pretty excited. I have a gentleman by the name of Rob Smoland here, and he's with the MCC. Which is really a letters that's for a really big name. I'm going to say it probably just a couple of times because it's a big name. But it's the Metropolitan Consortium of Community Developers. And Rob is actually one of their enterprise facilitators, works with small businesses in the micro-lending world and development. And we're going to have a great conversation with Rob. Moving into the second hour today, we have a business spotlight. Bruce Stash is with us. And this is for all you golfers out there that are not great golfers, but really love to play the game. And Bruce has a company called The Hacker's Guide. It's actually a book, a website, and we're going to have a great conversation about what it is he's going to be promoting and sharing with us. And we're going to replay later on in the 2 o'clock hour in our Leaders and Teachers, Scott Ginsburg. He is also known as the Name Tag Guy. Had him on back in January. And I'm excited to share his interview with you guys again today because he's always talking about approachability, how to be stronger when you're out networking, and, you know, just some tips and tricks on developing yourself and your business, especially now here in 2010. So again, another 2 hours of jam-packed business fun, and we're going to dive right into it like we always do, into our Team of Advisors segment. So first I want to say hi, Jeff. How are you today?
I'm doing well.
Good to have you in studio once again.
It's always fun to be here.
I know. It's always a good time. And you've brought a guest with you via phone, but
that's
he's
right.
Still with us in spirit here in the studio. We have Marshall Tannick on the line. Hi, Marshall. Are you there?
Hi, Pam. Hi, Jeff. Thanks for allowing me to be appear on the telephone. I'm busy working this morning and met some clients.
Yay! Well, that's what we like to hear, is a working attorney who's going to take a few minutes today. You're going to share with us I'm a marketer at heart, so this is going to be a great conversation, and I know that you, Marshall, and Jeff are the two marketing brains, right, behind Marshall. I can't even say all these M's. Mansfield, Tannick, and Cohen. Is that correct, Marshall?
Well, I don't know if we're the marketing brands, but Jeff certainly does a lot of marketing, and I do as well. It's part of being a good lawyer, I think. It's developing business and making people feel comfortable with your legal work and helping them understand when they need a lawyer and when they don't. So I think marketing is not necessarily a standalone feature. I think good lawyers are good marketers because they're trying to bring their legal services to the attention of people.
Well, that's a very valid point because you are an expert-driven model. And, of course, we want to make sure that we're hiring the right experts for the job. And today, let's set the stage, if we can, a little bit, Marshall, with your background. Of course, you are one of the three names in Mansfield, Tannick & Cohen. So tell us a little bit about your particular area of legal that you practice, and just give us a little bit of background, if you would.
Thank you, Pam. I'm a former journalist and writer and author, and I still keep my hand in a lot of journalistic and writing endeavors. So a part of my work consists of defamation, communications, privacy-related matters. It's not all I do, but it's a significant portion of my work. Oftentimes it overlaps with other aspects of my work, which is mainly litigation, representing individuals and businesses in ongoing or pending legal disputes. A lot of litigation work in various tribunals, courts, administrative bodies, arbitration, mediation. I do a substantial amount of employment-related work representing individuals, organizations, businesses, and a potpourri of other work, including a lot of media-related work as well, which is related to the defamation work I do.
Well, and we're going to get into a lot of that media conversation, especially now you hear the word media so much, and my guess is that what you do is kind of taking an interesting turn here in the 21st century. So let's start actually with a definition, if you would. We've all probably heard this word before, but will you define for us, Marshall, what defamation actually means and why we should be concerned about this if we're marketing our own businesses or putting our information out in the marketplace?
Simply put, Pam, defamation consists of making false factual statements about somebody else or some individual or organization that are, as I indicated, false and harmful to their reputation. That's the essence of defamation.
And with some of the, if you could provide maybe some examples of ways that businesses need to be on guard in terms of talking. Now, competition is a big piece of this. So we may know our competition, but there's got to be that fine line between what we can say and how far we can go in terms of comparison our product or service to another competitor. What I'm actually thinking of, Marshall, is back in the 80s, the Pepsi Coke challenge stuff. and that was also when I believe it was Burger King and McDonald's started doing more public competition verbally in their advertising. Where is that fine line in terms of defamation where you're actually just comparing yourself to the competitor versus doing harmful damage?
Well, that's a good question. I was the other night I was watching a late night TV. I was watching one of the basketball games, and I kind of dozing off, and I popped up when I saw this Burger King ad with the Burger King King royalty entering into a McDonald's facility and stealing their formula or something, and I wasn't sure if it was put on by Burger King or McDonald's, but that's an example of what you talked about.
Yes.
That's been a real hot area. You're right, it started with the fast food change. It's developed into the cereal manufacturers. The razor companies have had a lot of litigation amongst themselves about who gives the best shave or who has the sharpest razor. But there's two variants, I think, of defamation that tends to affect the business world. One is the one you mentioned, the competition. What can you say about yourself, and what can you say that's derogatory or negative about your competition? That's a big area. It's a difficult area, and it's an important one for businesses. The other area where we see a lot of business-related defamation is, and most of it's on the Internet these days, but some of it's orally and otherwise, is statements made by businesses about former employees, so-called reference-related litigation, or the variant of that where you have disgruntled ex-employees or customers who go on the Internet and say bad things about the businesses.
Well, that brings up an interesting point because there's probably a lot more going on now more than ever, especially with the open type of sites that we have in terms of the Internet. So,
absolutely. I do a lot of defamation work, as I indicated, and traditionally it was somewhat conventional defamation work, newspapers, magazines, television, radio. But about 80% of the cases I see that are defamation-related are Internet cases, including one that I was involved in all day yesterday. And that's, as you point out, because everybody these days can be their own publisher, and by pushing a couple buttons, they can communicate to the whole world at large, all 6 billion people on the face of the planet. So that's a real hot area, and as I said, disputes between ex-employees and businesses is a real hot topic, and another variant of that is when ex-customers go on the Internet and disparage businesses with which they've had unfavorable dealings.
You know, let's touch on that a little bit, if we can. Let's specifically talk about the employee-employer situation. So, you know, at what point does a business normally start to go down this path of I need to get my attorney involved, especially if you've got a Twitter or a Facebook situation going on now. Someone has let go of their position at work. They get on Facebook. They say something not necessarily nice about the former employer. How does an employer actually make the decision to bring you into the process?
Well, let me walk through what would be a typical example, and you've absolutely identified the syndrome. An ex-employee who is no longer with the company, and sometimes it can be current employees too, but usually it's an ex-employee who has some chip on their shoulder, and they say bad things about the business. Some of them can be just general venting. Some of them can be very specific, talking about specific problems the business has. Some of them can be very troublesome. Some can be about identifying some corners that have been cut by the business, maybe some inappropriate dealings that the business has had with government entities, safety issues, those kind of things, and it will be promulgated on the internet. Once the business becomes aware of it, and they usually become aware of it pretty quickly, the internet, you can't hide too well on the internet these
right.
days. And in fact, the people going there don't want to hide. These are
right.
they're not hidden. They're intended to be widely disseminated. Once the business finds out about it, at that point they may contact their corporate counsel or business lawyer like Jeff. And oftentimes it'll be the Jeffs, O'Briens of the world, the lawyers, sometimes it's the business owners themselves, who will then say, we need some help on this. We probably ought to contact somebody who specializes in this area of the law. But like trademark infringement or copyright infringement, you have to act quickly, and businesses want to act quickly because they don't want to wait too long, and they usually don't have to wait too long because, as I said, these things are usually fairly transparent. So getting on these things quickly is very important, both legally and pragmatically, because you want to stop the bleeding as soon as possible.
Well, in these situations, you know, you've given a couple of really very specific negative examples, you know, a safety issue or a very specific reference to, you know, like you said, cutting a corner or that type of thing. So if it's just a disgruntled employee that's, you know, just kind of letting off steam, you know, is the company, when they're monitoring this, whether it's their legal department, are they kind of have a sense of how far, if it's worth the time and energy, if it starts to go down this other path where it becomes much more serious?
Absolutely. The business will have to make a judgment as to whether it's worth pursuing. And if it's sometimes just general ventilation, they may say it's not worth the time,
right.
the money, and the exposure to engage this person. Let them ventilate and let them not even think we care, and maybe they'll just kind of peter out. So a business judgment has to be made as to whether it's worth pursuing in some form or another. But generally, where the allegations are fairly serious and involve some legal violations or some ethical violations, the companies will want to act and want to act swiftly, but they have to make a threshold decision as to whether it's worth doing something. And then the question is, what are the somethings or what are the alternatives available to a business in these circumstances?
Hey, if I can just chime in one thing here, I mean, talking about these alternatives, and I've seen this come up a couple times with web-related businesses who understand how search engine optimization works, how Google works. One of the things that happens is just you have someone putting negative stuff out about you on the internet. One of the alternatives before it gets to, you know, it comes into me or comes into Marshall, is to put out positive content, put a lot of it out there, so when Google does its organic search, it pushes down the negative stuff. Now, that's a cat-and-mouse game because, of course, what happens is the defamer then pushes a whole bunch more stuff out via blogs, via comments on different websites and things like that.
Sure.
And it's just this ongoing battle. And at some point, you know, they may cry uncle and call us and then that's when you get into the cease and desist letters and things like that. But,
okay.
But the hard part when you're dealing when it's happening on the internet, Marshall might put out or I might put out a cease and desist letter, and then whoever the person is that's doing it on the internet will then start saying stuff about us,
right.
you know?
Well, you're right, Jeff. We've gotten a lot of what I call free publicity by the promoter of the Internet diatribes putting our letter on the Internet.
Yeah.
As I tell people, it's good publicity, I guess, for us, but oftentimes they will take the role of the victim. Look what they're doing to me. They
yep.
stick their lawyers on me. They will publish the cease and desist letter, and for those who might not be real familiar with it, the cease and desist letter is usually the first alternative. The lawyer, oftentimes the company lawyer like a Jeff, or maybe an outside lawyer like me, will write a letter to the person, if they can find them. Sometimes part of the problem is finding them. But we'll write a letter or send some kind of communication basically saying, stop doing it, and if you continue doing it, there's a threat of legal action.
Well, at some point, I think the attorney has a pretty strong voice to get people to stop some activities, no matter how much we think we have power on the Internet. So this is what we're going to do, guys. I got to take a break, and when we come back, we're going to continue this conversation. We're going to start moving into from employer to customer a little bit around the same lines as well, especially because I've got some examples I want to throw your way that I've seen myself on Twitter and how companies are handling it from a service perspective and when we bring you in to make sure that we're taking care of our business. So what I have here is Marshall Tannick and Jeff O'Brien. They are attorneys with Mansfield Tannick & Cohen. We're talking defamation today on Next Stage Business Radio Show. This is Pamela Muldoon, and you're listening to Business 1570. Welcome back to the Next Stage Business Radio Show with Pamela Muldoon, having a very interesting conversation, and it's one I think I'm more interested than I realize, because I'm watching this stuff all the time on social media space, and now I'm kind of concerned for some people. But I'm here with the attorneys from Mansfield Tanick & Cohen. We have Jeffrey O'Brien here in studio. On the phone with us is Marshall Tanick, and we're talking about defamation in your advertising, and not just in your advertising, but also as employees, former employees, customers. We have quite a little lively discussion. Now, Marshall, I am kind of curious. So if I've hired you as an attorney, if I'm a business person, and I've hired you as an attorney to take on this defamation, what are some of the ways, some remedies of defamation that come about this? What are some of the results?
As Jeff pointed out, the first step is usually to send a cease and desist letter asking the perpetrator to stop doing what they're doing. Sometimes that can be a little bit difficult with the Internet, because it's not just a matter of stopping, it's a matter of also removing it from the Internet. And one of the case I was involved in just yesterday involved defamation where the proponent had stopped, had taken it off the Internet, or stopped doing it, but we had to get it off the Internet and had to reacquire the domain name. So sometimes that can be a problem. And oftentimes the cease and desist letter works. I don't have exact percentages, but I'd say at least half the time the cease and desist letter has some immediate impact. That's the good news. The bad news is about half the time it doesn't. And when it doesn't, oftentimes the, as Jeff indicated, the person to whom the letter is sent will retaliate or kind of have a mule kick phenomenon and even make it worse. They say, okay, now that I've got your attention, I'm going to make it worse. But at a minimum, when it doesn't work, it at least stays the same and sometimes escalates. Oftentimes that'll be get yet a second cease and desist letter, but at some point, the business and its lawyer have to decide whether to take the next step. There are some agencies, government agencies, one can go to try to complain or try to have the agency help. But frankly, that's usually futile. It's a long process and it's a drawn out process. So usually you have to take the law into your own hands, so to speak, which is legal, and bring some kind of suit. Another alternative that is equally futile is go to the internet providers and ask them to help. I have found that is a almost invariably, inevitably futile for a couple of reasons. One is that there is a federal law that immunizes website hosts from any liability. So the GoDaddies of the world, the eBays, the Googles, they have no liability by federal law. Therefore, they have very little incentive, like none at all, to remove offending materials. And in fact, they just consider it a waste of time and they don't want to be bothered with it. So going to the provider and saying, to the website host and saying, help us, is almost always a waste of time and money. So usually, as I indicated, one has to sue the person who's making the defamatory statements. Sometimes that's difficult to do because the person's in a different state. You have to find them. You have to be able to serve them with legal papers. And a lot of these people do operate below radar. But you have to start a lawsuit, a conventional civil lawsuit. My experience has been that those lawsuits always work, but sometimes they don't work real quickly. They're kind of like slow-reacting medicine, and sometimes they're costly. They inevitably, I have never had a case I've started like that that did not achieve its objective. That's the good news. The bad news is sometimes it's taken a while, and it's cost not insubstantial amounts of money.
Well, in one of the there's a few examples that are kind of running through my head here, but you know what's interesting about this the internet provider not having having any need to participate. There's no legal need. There's no regulation need. So of course, even if you're in that process, it still stays out there on the internet. I mean, it's in the limbo period of while the attorneys are trying to figure all this out, where at least if it was just a hand copy or a television, you know, with FCC regulation, we had a whole different ballgame there, right? Because you could pull it off the air.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, but you can't just pull it off the internet, like, is what I'm hearing. It's not as black and white.
Yeah, absolutely. It's very difficult to get these matters removed from the Internet. It takes time, and oftentimes the first step in a lawsuit is to get some kind of temporary restraining order,
right,
or injunction where a judge will require the material to be removed. And sometimes that works, and sometimes it doesn't.
You know, besides talking about just the internet in general, like Google and some of the domain name providers, social media is another. You know, Facebook and Twitter have their own policies about taking things down. And I know there was just one that came up in the last week. There was a Facebook fan page essentially advocating not nice things to happen to the president. And
right.
Facebook said, unless it's pornographic, we're not taking it down.
Right, right.
You know, so even these the social media sites are the same way. They have their policies, but there's a very limited area where they will actually take content down off those sites.
You're right, Jeff, and you're right for chiming in, Pam. I think except for pornography, they will allow anything on there. And some of this isn't just aspersions against a business. Sometimes the ex-employees will publish or disseminate trade secrets, pricing information, confidential data. So it's not always just a ventilating in a general sense. But except for pornography, I think the providers do not want to be in the position of being the gatekeeper or watchdog on these things. And then what's that famous statement, Jeff, from the Supreme Court Justice Potter Stewart about pornography?
We know it when we see it.
Yeah, sometimes pornography is different in the eyes of the beholder. And you may say, hey, this is pornographic, and the provider may say, no, it's not.
Right, right. So now you've got that issue that needs to be discussed and agreed upon as well. So, because there's a couple examples as you're talking about this, Marshall, that, you know, I am a marketer, so I think a lot of it from that perspective first. But, of course, was it a year or so ago that Domino's Pizza had a big issue with former, which are now former employees, doing a YouTube video of how the pizza's really made, quote unquote, really made, okay? And it went viral on YouTube. And, of course, Domino's had not been initially monitoring the websites, the social sites, to catch this within, it took at least a week for them to get actively involved. But now in that particular situation, I don't know if there was any legal recourse, but here, of course, there's a video that's out on the internet. You can't just pull it off, right?
Correct. And there's a First Amendment considerations, too, which oftentimes make it difficult. As I said, the cases I've had have all been successful, but so far. But the persons who are putting these materials on the internet and on YouTube, they have a First Amendment right to communicate and express their views. And sometimes if there are serious problems that a business has, it's in the public interest to expose these widely. So it's not just a black and white situation where the ex-employee or the disgruntled employee or the disgruntled customer is wrong. Sometimes they're right.
Well, yeah, I think that you bring up a very valid point there. You know, we're kind of looking at one side of the puzzle here, and now, of course, you're doing the flip side, which maybe there are some issues inside the organization that need to come to light, right? And this is also an avenue of which people can do that. And so as an attorney, how do you work that fine line between my right to speech, free speech, and the defamation? I mean, especially with the internet, it's got to be a little cloudy.
Well, I'm going to throw this back to Jeff for a minute because he does a lot of corporate and business counseling, but I think the first step is to find, after ascertaining what's being said, is to check with your client, the business, and see if there's some validity to it and see if there may be some changes that have to be made internally rather than viscerally striking out at the communication. I think step number one, Jeff, is to check it out and see if there's some merit to it.
That's right. That's right. You know, anytime, you know, we do any kind of litigation, you know, we're putting our necks on the line. We're standing up on behalf of our client in a courtroom in front of judges and other attorneys that we know. There's some due diligence that we do before we take that step of writing the cease and desist letter or going and filing a lawsuit. We do some, you know, we want to see some background information and things like that. We'll ask for, you know, any, you know, communications or correspondence. You know, we'll ask the client essentially, you know, we're playing devil's advocate. We're essentially asking the client to disprove what's being said before we take the step of throwing, of firing the first shot.
Well, and that makes total sense, and that's, of course, why you have to have these advisors on your team, guys in business, guys and gals in business. This is one of the reasons why it's so important, because it's not always up to us to make the decision, and there is a fine line between some of this stuff that's happening. So we're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we're going to wrap up our conversation on this defamation and advertising, employee and customer relation with a business, and hopefully kind of put a nice little bow on our discussion today as well. So I have here in studio Jeffrey O'Brien on the phone. We have Marshall Tanick from Mansfield Tanick & Cohen. You're listening to Next Stage Business Radio Show. I am Pamela Muldoon, and this is Business 1570. Welcome back to the Next Stage Business Radio Show with Pamela Muldoon, talking defamation and how to watch for it, be careful for it, and if you need to, hire the attorneys that'll take care of you. And of course, I have Marshall Tanick on the phone and Jeffrey O'Brien with Mansfield Tanick & Cohen right here in studio. And you know, as we bring this conversation, kind of start to put a bow on it, I would like to talk a little bit about, I as a business owner, how can I watch for this and be more proactive? What are ways that I can prevent this process of defamation either to my company or, you know, just kind of keeping an eye out for myself? What are some tips you guys can provide?
Well, that's a very good question. Being proactive and preventive is much better than having to chase down malefactors after the fact. Sometimes it can be difficult, but there's a few steps that I can think of that ought to be followed, and Jeff probably can weigh in with a few more. Number one is try to have a pretty good gauge on how your employees feel about the company when they leave. That can sometimes be done by exit interviews or other means to kind of have an idea if there are people out there who might cause trouble. That's not obviously a fail-safe method, but it can help the company to a business to ascertain if there are potential troublemakers out there. Now, the problem, of course, is prospective troublemakers don't always play their hand ahead of time, but doing exit interviews can help to some extent. It also can show the employees that even though they're leaving under maybe less than good terms, the employer or the business does care about them and has some concern about how they felt about the business. Likewise, surveys of customers can be helpful too, finding out if there are customers who have negative views about the business. Oftentimes you'll find it out because the customers will let their negative views be known. And of course, addressing those problems and not ignoring them is a major factor too. Whether you have a formal complaint department or not, I always urge businesses when there are problems that are communicated in terms of the product or the services, don't ignore those problems. Talk to the people and at least letting them know that you care about it and them and they're taking their concerns seriously oftentimes prevents those disgruntled customers from going on the Internet or bad-mouthing the company or reporting the company to licensing agencies or other regulators. There was a study done several years ago by the University of Iowa Business School. It's referred to as the University of Iowa study, which is a good way to refer to it because that's where it was done. But it's kind of well known in the field. And what it tends to show is that about 80% of all potential business disputes like this were avoided or headed off when the business takes some efforts to try to address the problem. Even if they don't satisfy the customer, the fact that they've tried oftentimes dissuades the customer from going ballistic. So those are some steps to try to avoid these problems.
Well, and those are great steps, and I think it's a great reminder that regardless of how small we think the complaint is, that we still need to put some kind of due diligence and fair process into that. So, Jeff, what do you have to add in terms of some proactivity that I can take as a business owner?
Well, we talked a little bit about how prevalent the Internet is in this whole discussion and how some of this stuff arises. There's an attempt to make it go viral, so to speak.
Right.
And I'll put my hat on as the marketing guy for the firm. I very frequently will Google our firm's name, Google our attorneys' names, to see what the search engines are picking up about our people and our firm. That's a good thing to do for a company, too, if you know, whether it be a company or its officers, anybody that's out there in the public. It's good to see what's being monitor
right.
And see what's being said on the Internet about them.
Well, and it is. And, you know, and we as marketing people, that's just something I tell my clients to do all the time, too, is to always monitor your name. But now we kind of took it a step further in today's discussion as to some of the whys you better monitor your name, not just from a marketing perspective. Well, I want to make sure as we wrap it up today, guys, that we give the audience an opportunity, as always, to connect with you. So, of course, the website for the firm is
MansfieldTanick.com.
And in terms of this, because, you know, we've had a few of the attorneys, you know, they're kind of working their way through the show here, and one of the things that I really like about your website is you provide a lot of information on the website that we can connect with for different topics. And is this the case with the defamation topic as
well?
That's
right. We've got a few articles on there in the publication section. I mean, there's lots of stuff on our website. I always say that there's thousands of dollars of free legal advice
right.
on our website. And, you know, just since we have Marshall online, I'll make a particular note. If you go to our homepage right now, Marshall has an article in this month's Bar Magazine on 50 years of twins-related litigation. You know, they're 50 years old this year. Marshall wrote a very interesting article about some of the cases, everything from the Metrodome being constructed to contraction. It's on our homepage. You can take a look at it. mansfieldtank.com.
So that means you're a big Twins fan, right, Marshall?
Well, thank you for that nice comment, Jeff and Pam. And that article does even talk about some defamation cases that have occurred in the Twins' history.
Very nice. So it's a great example of some of the things that we've talked about today in our short time together. And puts a very specific twist on the whole conversation. So, of course, check these guys out at mansfieldtanic.com. The information is also on the Next Stage Business Radio Show website, nextstagebusinessradio.com, as our team of advisors, because we have the attorney, the firm, as our advisory firm for the legal matters. So, first, thank you so much, Marshall, for taking time out of your busy Saturday to call in and share your expertise with our audience. We really do appreciate that today.
Thank you very much. I enjoy listening to the program from time to time with Jeff and some other people from our firm and others, and I find I learned a lot from listening to the program myself.
Oh, good. Well, thank you so much. We appreciate it. We'll probably have you on again because something tells me this topic is only going to get bigger as the Internet gets bigger. And Jeff, of course, as always, thank you for being here with us on May Day, May 1st.
Right. Always fun.
It's always fun. All right. We're going to come back in just a minute. We have Rob Smoland. He is the Enterprise Facilitator for the Metropolitan Consortium of Community Developers. Say that fast three times. So we're going to have him on deck in the Org of the Week. This is Next Stage Business Radio Show. I'm Pamela Muldoon, and you're listening to Business 1570.